Welcome back, everybody, to another... I always say it's fantastic, so I'm just going to keep with the trend. It's a fantastic new episode of the Be Better podcast. Our temporary resident couch occupier, Devin, is here with me once again. Devin, hello. Welcome back.
Oh, Devin Palmer, Remax results.
Jesus. Let's get that out of the way. I almost made you a cup of coffee with your own mug that you gave me a couple episodes back.
Well, you're very welcome.
When Ted was here. The holiday gift pack.
The holiday gift pack. Yeah. You texted me and I texted back. I used the word sir in the text.
You did. I felt old.
Well, I'm working my... I feel like now that I'm an employee here, I have to put, you know, really treat you like the boss.
Well, we have yet to have your year-end evaluation and we will need to have that.
Yeah, and maybe discuss the comp plan.
A comp plan, yeah. You get free coffee when you're here. Like, you say employee. Like, sorry, we don't have employees. We have contractors.
I prefer to be W-2, actually, sir.
No, that's not how it's going to work. That's not how it's going to work. I don't employ my kids at all. I have one single employee to make sure that the tax dodging stays at a maximum and a high level.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody else is a quote-unquote contractor, just like Iron Man.
Just like Iron Man.
Everybody's a contractor. No one's an employee. Makes life so much easier.
No, I get that.
So we got some good topics to talk about today. We're going to talk about shoes. We're going to talk about illegal equipment. We're going to talk about beer brewing again. Mm-hmm. We had a little touch, probably kind of a little fallback on there. We have St. Patrick's Day coming up on the doorstep here coming. So we got to talk.
And there will be no culturally insensitive comments from Christopher on St. Patty's Day.
No accents will be performed
by Christopher.
No, nothing purposeful. We will learn some things though. I did learn some
Do you have some trivia?
I have some trivia, some Perfect. Interesting facts here. But we are also starting to kick off the season for triathlon.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm going to just start this off by saying, a big change in my daily routine is I have started to ride the trainer on an every other day basis. Now that I got the new Wahoo in the garage.
Very good.
You know, I finally gave away all those old compu trainers, mm-hmm. AKA boat anchors. Actually, I had to give them away. I gave away like 10 of them to coaches across the United States. Just sent them off. Like one shipping was like $350. They weighed so much.
They're bulky, and they're just an awkward shape, and they're heavy.
Yeah,
There's no way around it.
And the technology on bike trainers have come so far. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when we started, it was kind of the birth of the kinetic road machine, right? It was the fluid trainer. It was bomb proof. It changed and simulated. But the problem is always like the fact that the roller touched the tire.
Yep.
You had the Cheeto dust. I mean, people were selling you specific tires for your trainer. Mm-hmm. Even those wore through. Did you ever get a trainer flat? Where you got a heat bubble?
You get the flats, or you just get a bad connection. You have to get at the certain tightness. You have to keep the tires PSI'd a certain way, or you're getting slipping.
Yep, you get out of the saddle, it's like, whoosh, whoosh. Mm-hmm. Yep, so that's all changed. And then CompuTrainer came in because it controlled the erg, and that was like the next level. But now that they have the direct drive, I mean, it's a huge game changer. I don't know how anybody can, you know, not go direct drive these days.
It's such a superior product and experience.
It's a huge game changer in the fact that it's more stable. The only thing it doesn't do is it doesn't give you any rocking. So you are just like straight up and down. You don't have any movement. It doesn't help you with bike handling. But from a reaction standpoint, also from an integration standpoint, Bluetooth, so it's wireless,
mm-hmm.
right? And integrating with all of these interactive things. Like, I mean, I use Zwift right now, and it's flawless.
It is stunning to think of how far ahead of the curve CompuTrainer was. To have Ironman course video you could be riding along to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in what, 08, 2010?
Uh-huh. They recorded video during the race, and you could ride the race simulated in the speed that you were going.
So they were that far ahead of it, and then it seems like they never picked up the next pieces with hardware and went over to direct drive. And they just, they disappeared.
And you know that the CompuTrainer was actually was not a product that company went out to try and define. They were a flow sensor company out of Seattle. So they made flow sensors for ships and airplanes, like flow sensors for like fuel.
So it was too much of an afterthought, and the There probably wasn't enough money to keep pursuing that piece of their business.
I think a couple of their tech nerds built something and said, "Oh, you know, somebody wanted to buy this. Let's do it out here." Because, I mean, really, over the years, their product from a technology standpoint never advanced, except for the addition of the puck. Mm-hmm. And even then, it was like you had to rebuy the whole thing. It wasn't like just an upgrade.
Yeah,
you know, you had, I mean, everything was very wire censored. I mean, back in the old days when we were in the, had the studio, it was like it took forever to wire bikes up. Then you had to, like, you know, do rolling resistance. And there was a lot of calibration to be done.
Well, yeah, if you were doing a session with a client,
yep,
they had to be there so much in advance,
yeah,
just to get dialed.
And it was and you know, in that it was difficult, but what it did offer was it had a coaching element. Mm-hmm. So you could see a diagnostic element of how someone was riding in like a graph. And that's what you don't get with a lot of these other programs that are out there right now. And, you know, now that the software is independent from Wahoo. Like Wahoo has like they do have some proprietary software, but most of the training software is from some other company. And CompuTrainer just didn't do that. They didn't really kind of play well in that realm. It's a huge game changer. And from a coaching standpoint, I'm creating tons of workouts in Zwift,
mm-hmm,
and then putting them in Training Peaks, and then they can be put back into Zwift. I'm actually working I've been building workouts for a company called Credo Try. It's like a phone app that is a motivational, kind of daily motivational reminder for multi-sport athletes. And so this comes from an old business partner of mine in South Florida, because everybody needs a business partner in South Florida.
Of course.
Yeah, it doesn't sound shady at all. But that's Lou Canton. So Lou was Leanda's manager, and mm-hmm, I ran to Lou like a long time back, and I've done camps at Club Med with Lou, and we did some work in the Bahamas before the pandemic and the hurricanes basically wiped the island off the map. But Lou and another business partner have this thing called Credo Try, and essentially it's like every day it's a high-level athlete will give you a motivational statement or a motivational kind of like a little tidbit, and it's to keep you going. And then they are doing these rides along with them on Zwift every week. And so what they do is they have their athletes, and it's everybody, like from all over the globe. They send me a workout that's like their favorite 60-minute workout. I have to take it from whatever they're telling me, extrapolating it. One dude just sent it to me in French, and I was like, oh, how do I do? I'm like, I don't know what this means.
Je ne sais quoi.
It's exactly how it was. And so what I do is I have to then build it into this interactive program, mm-hmm, call it their name, put little motivational words in there, change the RPMs, but build stuff, and which is, you know, good for me trying to figure that out. But I've been riding these on the backside. So every other day I ride a 60-minute workout that's from somebody. So I rode Flora Duffy's ride the other day. Mm-hmm. I rode Grace Norman has a pretty good one. Crowey's got, you know, like everybody, like there's just like, you would know all the names.
Yep.
So Credo Try is a really cool thing, and it's you know, I don't know where it's gonna go, but I'm helping them out and I'm doing some work, and it's fun to see like these things in action because they are very interactive, and it's been a good way to kind of try and get, you know, my cycling dad body back.
Well, you're transitioning. We're wrapping up hockey season.
Yeah.
We're coming. Eventually spring will arrive here in Minnesota, and then it'll be ride season.
It will.
And I've been riding.
You've been riding?
And I'm like 20 years younger than you.
Yeah, at least.
And I'm so much stronger. So if you don't get yourself together, it's going to be a real hurt locker for you when we ride.
Well, first of all, I want to say how surprised I am that you did not pick up on the cycling dad's drop there, and how you didn't pimp your own. See, Devin does another podcast that he is, like, it's a recreational thing, Cycling Dad's Podcast.
The Cycling Dad's Podcast.
It is.
We talked to dads who bike.
We did. I've been a guest on there. We've had you guys both on a guest in here. It's Aaron, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you and Aaron have both been on here, so it was good. But it is, it's, you kind of got to have to get into it, because with all the kids, you sacrifice everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so you don't have time, like, between school and work and everything. There's not much time for you. And so I'm trying to take that back.
When you have
back.
Seven different hockey players in your house, that's a lot of practices.
And I'm one of them.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I've been trying to just do something a little bit different, get back into that. Because, you know, training and being an athlete for a number of years, that's a big part of your life. And when you get away from it, and the pandemic kind of pushed me away from it a bit. But
you were in shape. Was it fall of 21 when we did the Epic Ride to Canada?
Yeah, that was.
In shape. You can't go ride to Canada without being in shape.
It was
shape.
It was 350 miles in 3 days. Yeah, that's a pretty good deal. No, that was nothing. It's a different ride though. You know, it was pretty much all uphill going to Canada. I mean, literally.
Talk to us about the headwind. Was it all headwind too?
Mm-hmm.
Was it snowing on you?
Well, let's say that. So for those of you who are not aware of what we're discussing here, when I turned 50, I wanted to do something kind of crazy, and I chose to ride my bike from the Twin Cities to the Canadian border, where the Pigeon River meets Lake Superior. And in doing that, I decided I wanted to have like pretty much like just a couple people that would parallel me, you know, people that like meant something in my life. And, you know, the people that I originally chose were not available. So I asked Devin,
when
the A team was not there, we had to go all the way down to the L team. No. So Devin has been, you know, you've been a part of my life for so long. And so Devin rode the first section with me out of White Bear. And we
escorted you White Bear to Hinkley. Then Micah picked you up in Hinkley, got you to Duluth.
Yeah. Well, let's just focus on your segment and what a train wreck that was. So how many flats did Devin have in the first 5 miles?
One in the first five.
And then how many in the second five?
We were maybe...
Then we went about 5 miles again. You had another flat.
Did I get a second flat?
Yeah, you did.
No. The second flat was further on. The second flat was maybe 5 miles from the end.
No, that was the third flat. You had...
That was third?
Yeah, you had three flats. And because eventually...
I'm not remembering the middle
because,
flat.
Because, and here's all I can say, because you carried two tubes with you.
Yep.
And that third flat, I had to use a patching, had to use a patching kit. Remember we were trying to patch it up and it didn't hold? And then finally you like just tapped out and Jill had to come get you?
I'm not remembering
and
the
And I pushed
flat.
You out. Yeah, that's the third flat came. Because I remember I was like, okay, here we go. We're making it 5 miles and then something happens to Devin. And 5 miles and something happens to Devin. And that day was like, that day was hard because it was raining. It was a bit windy. It was cold, but it was fun. There was no one else out there. It was a very enjoyable time. We spent a good time on the bike. And that day ended up with Micah telling me to shut the F up and just ride. Because I was trying to figure out where I was going to go in the city of Duluth. And she's like, just shut the F up. Just go.
Like, we're riding through Jay Cook State Park. We're almost there. Just
go.
Quiet.
I know. It was terrible. But it was a great experience. So yes, that did show that I had some fitness in there. But it's not the same as it is. You know, you age and you don't stay the same. And eventually you will find that. You've kind of come in and out of that fitness.
Oh yeah.
Fitness form before. I've seen you stretch the seams and you're back looking very svelte now, so you look really well.
Oh yeah. Well, when we had our first back in 2019, I was sedentary for 3 full months. I just got out of the rhythm and for whatever reason all I was doing was walking the dog and I ballooned up pretty badly.
Yeah.
So when it was very hard when I came back. It was humbling to come back that week and see where the numbers are. It's tough.
Yeah, when you start seeing watts, you're like, okay, you really understand. Mm-hmm. Like, this is where it's going. I actually, so here you'll appreciate this funny story. I have a client that I started up, and he said an older gentleman, retired gentleman, and he said that his goal was to be able to hold 400 watts for 40 minutes.
Okay.
And I was like, who in God's name told you that was something you could do? Because... I'm trying to think of, could you hold 40 watts for your FTP test, for 400 watts for 20 minutes in an FTP test? How many people have you seen hold 400 watts average on an FTP test in 20 minutes?
Yeah, that's an elite level performance for 20 minutes. Yeah. You know, like I'm thinking there were plenty of my colleagues who I was racing against who would have hit that metric. I personally never hit that metric.
That's a big number.
It's
number. I would bet that a lot of, like, I mean, even pros would have a hard time holding 400 watts for 40 minutes. Average for 40 minutes. Just put that in your head. Like, you have to, first of all, just go ride 400 watts for a 3-minute or a 5-minute interval.
Yeah. For a short interval. That's
for a
1-minute
interval.
Effort.
Yeah. For a 1-minute interval. Mm-hmm. That's a hefty, hefty, steep thing. So it's, you know, how do you tell somebody, maybe not the most realistic number. Let's try and look for something else. And let's try and use a different basic. And I also asked, like, where did that come from? And it came from some other person. Like, this is what you should shoot for. And I can't believe somebody...
I was watching an Andy Potts YouTube video.
No, it was like it was a trainer or somebody had told them, this is what you should goal for. This is where you should be. And I was thinking, who would tell somebody they could hold 400 watts for 40 minutes? And that's what we should shoot for.
Well, and especially a master's athlete.
Oh, my goodness.
Because pure power, from what I have heard from anecdotally from other athletes, is over the course of your 40s, you start to lose your edge on some of the pure high-end power on the bike.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can keep endurance,
yep.
But you just don't have the big numbers.
Yep.
You know, so you can, like, I can go all day. So this is why when you say, oh, but you went to Canada. I mean, sure, I average like, you know, I average just a little under 200 watts for 350 miles, but, you know, that's not a lot. You know, that's,
well, it is and it isn't. I think you're under, I think you're underrating it a little bit.
Yeah, but it wasn't like I was like throwing down pushing. I mean, yep. I was enjoying the ride. I was checking out the scenery. I was eating cheeseburgers along the way, you know, because you just, whatever, you need to put food
and
in.
You were very judicious on effort, because after my second to last flat, I was like, oh, hey, you want me to just pull and make up some time? And you were like, no,
because I've got 3 days to think about in front of this. But also, I was looking at, we couldn't just dilly-dally, because we were in a fixed amount of time for daylight.
Yep.
You know, we started in the dark,
yep.
And I finished in the dark.
Because we were at the tail end, was it September-ish?
Yeah, it was.
Or maybe even, was it early October or was it September? So you're starting to lose.
It was early October. It was first weekend of October.
You're really starting to lose the daylight.
Yeah, it got dark. It was getting dark. And plus it was raining, so we didn't have like extra daylight. Second day was nice because it was clear in the sun, but it was kind of hellish. So, so trainer workouts are kind of cool.
Riddle me this with the Credo Tri and for you in general with your athletes. When you're giving them the signing the workout on Zwift, are they seeing wattage number or seeing like, hey, go up to 80%? Or are they seeing a number and aiming to hit it? Or is it erg mode and the resistance is matching the number they should be doing?
Great question. So normally what I'm doing is I'm working off of, it's going on erg mode.
Mm-hmm.
So it is monitoring percentage of FTP. And the workout is based, and so I build a workout based off of percentage of FTP, and each interval is and rest interval is a percentage. So you can do the same workout, you know, all year long, and if your FTP is changing, it'll match you.
Okay.
So it's going on. It's like it's working on fueling sources. It's working on energy systems specifically. They will be, because they're in erg mode, they don't change gears. There will be different times when I'll ask for different RPMs to simulate. They'll be in the saddle, out of the saddle, those type of things. But what I have learned is there's kind of a cheat code, right? So if you think about when you're, if I'm asking for, let's say 250 watts mm-hmm. for 5 minutes, 200, like wattage is force times cadence. And if I have not defined a specific cadence, if the athlete chooses to ride at 65 RPMs, the force that they need to create to get to 250 watts is higher. There's more newtons that are needed to get that, right? But if they go 95 RPMs, there's less newtons because the ratio changes to keep that same specific wattage. So for me, what I've found when I'm like seeing a big number up there, I'm like, oh crap, I got to get the RPMs up way high. Otherwise, you're just bogging down.
Yep.
So the erg backs off to match what the wattage needs to be. You follow me?
Yep.
And I don't think most people know that that's kind of a cheat code.
I remember it was similar in the CompuTrainer days. I remember some athletes like reporting like, yeah, I'm doing something in the range of like 400 watts for my intervals. I'm like,
yeah,
no, you're not. And I think the cheat code or what they ended up doing is they slogged it out. They would drift down. Yep. I just don't think they were actually hitting the wattage number.
Exactly. I have been running my Pioneer parallel with it,
mm-hmm.
and it's pretty spot on because, again, it's using the two metrics. It's using RPMs, and it's using force in newtons, and that's really what you're getting, and then the erg matches it so that the predicted output is the same. You know, because you can feel it. If you go from 65 RPMs to 85 RPMs, you can feel the resistance has gone down, which is how it should be, to keep the wattage as where it needs to be. But it is definitely interactive. It's pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, ultimately, I think if riders are using watts, they need to take that number and apply it outside into real world and just see how that translates.
Yeah.
So you need to definitely have a wattage meter. I think it is a great investment. But I mean, a Wahoo is about the same price as a wattage meter if you're going to go out and buy one. If you're going to get a dual-sided stages,
yeah,
it's about the same price. You're going to pay about a K.
Well, it's pretty bonkers. Think about what was available. You know, when I was starting the sport in 2006, you were getting like an SRM, the fancy-pantsy one, for like $3,000.
Yeah, the European one.
Like a European Pro. Or the hub-based from Ceres.
Yep, that was the Ergostat or something like that. Yeah, that was based in... Well, no, that was in the bottom bracket.
No, they had the Cyclops.
Oh, that was in the rear hub, yeah.
Yep, for rear hub. So I had trained with one of those for a long time.
Did you do it when you had to have the wired little shark fin that was on your chainstay?
No. And so I was just out of that era. So it's been interesting to track the new products because, like, you know, in the crank arms is now very prevalent. Mm-hmm. They have pedal options. They have all kinds of different options that just didn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
And the price point has come way down.
It has and it hasn't. I mean, there have been different options out there that are much cheaper, but they work on algorithms. They don't work on a true force meter. I mean, because you still have to have that force meter, you still have to have that newton meter. What you have now is when you see price points come down, it's single-sided instead of dual-sided. And that was kind of the evolution when you went from like Power Tap, which was in the hub,
yep.
which had its
Power own. Tap. That's yeah,
yep.
that's what I was
thinking. Yep, because Saris was over in Wisconsin, Power yep. Tap made it, and that was, you know, they had their own limitations. Like you had to change the wheel physically out and from a trainer to a racing wheel. But when that was only a singular point, right? So that was a proprietary location where they had the strain gauges. You moved it to the cranks, and what you started to see was you started to see a crank arm strain gauge on both sides, or that it was built into the, like, they have them built into the chain rings now as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you started to see both sides because people wanted to see what was being produced on both sides of the body. Much like the evolution of radio from AM to FM. Once you got to know FM is there, everything's more expensive. You can go out and buy an AM transistor radio and still hear like Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon in mono. But if you had an FM stereo, you were hearing all the things happen. FM stereo cost you more.
Yeah.
Right. So you can still get the same information, but the higher level end data and the true essence of the data comes through still at that higher price point.
Which some people need, some people don't. So
yeah.
With my new, I got a new gravel bike. I'm just going to do a one arm stages.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'll get it's a left crank arm. It'll replace the existing crank arm. It'll be.
Choice made specifically on price point?
Yep. Because it's maybe $400 for the unit.
Okay.
Versus if I were to do bolt-sided or, you know, a Garmin pedal system or something.
Did you get drive side or non-drive side?
Non-drive.
Okay. And did you buy the pedal, or did you buy the crank arm?
Well, I haven't bought it yet, but I'm going to.
So you can buy the crank arm or you can send your crank arm in and have them apply it at the factory. Where they can glue it to your crank arm, which you don't have to buy a new crank arm. Did you know that?
I did not. We'll see which path I go down here.
Yeah. I mean, so that's just when you talk about like money saving,
yep.
that is definitely a money saving option. It's not an immediate return. Like, okay, I buy it and I put it on, but you can take your stuff, send it in and have it put yep. on.
That's the way Pioneer was, right?
No, Pioneer came all as one. You couldn't retrofit Pioneer onto your bike. That had to.
Because I got two Pioneer units from a going out of business sale, and I feel like I had to send them somewhere. Or send the crank arm in with the unit. I feel like there was a mailing in process.
If you only had the non-drive train side.
Mm-hmm, which I did.
That was a glue on.
Oh, okay.
And so they would do that. But the drive train side is more like an SRM, like a Quark, where it's built into the Spider and it's more intricate.
Okay. Well, my original question is kind of stems from how the athlete is governing the session. You know, because my bias has always been, you govern the session by effort and use the data to measure what your output is.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, I look at it as almost more kind of a maturity thing as an athlete. Like if you don't know how to control yourself and control your efforts, you need the erg mode or you need the external input to push you there.
Yeah.
Or to rein you, you know, whatever the case is, push you there or rein you in or keep you on the line.
Yeah. I mean, that's control of effort is difficult. I mean, you know that. I mean, coming from a coaching background, you understand that that really true advancement comes from, you know, being either above threshold or, you know, well below. And too many times people like ride at threshold.
Yep.
You know, it's like group ride mentality. And it's that what they call a gray zone. And so you will advance to a certain point, but then you'll plateau. What the erg mode does, the erg mode forces you to go harder than you normally probably would. And then also forces you to go easier than you probably would. Without having to worry about everybody kind of dropping you. And I think that's the nice part about riding indoors and without being, I mean, even if you're riding Zwift in like a group ride, there's still this like mentality like, oh my God, I got to hold that wheel. And you still don't go as easy as you want. I mean, it's still there.
Well, I wonder what Zwift will do. So if people were doing their solo boring trainer hours over the winter, you know, with assigned intensity and then more normal, easy aerobic riding, if they're getting a full, properly polarized training winter on the bike, and then we introduce Zwift and the social aspect comes back and the social pressure, like, ooh, this is going to be not only on Zwift, but it's also going to be recorded on Strava.
Yep.
And I can't have someone see that I only average 170 watts on Strava. You know, is that reintroduction of the social aspect going to compromise a lot of people's mindsets with their indoor training?
Oh, absolutely. Especially if they start, if they tag team indoor Strava races.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they, you know, because Strava racing is now a thing.
Zwift. So Aaron.
Or I mean Zwift racing.
Zwift racing. My podcast co-host Aaron on the Cycling Dads podcast. He's the worst and least mature trainer I've ever met in my life. And he refuses to abide by simple, normal principles. Like, hey, you know what? Ride a few times a week. Once in a while, throw in something spicy. Once in a while, go a little longer.
Yep.
You know, like very normal, very like training is not, at its core, is not that complex.
Yeah.
So he'll go, hey, like, I abandoned all cycling for a few months and I'm just doing strength work. And it's like, well, what? So it's never just one thing. It's like all, or it's never just like, yeah, I'm added a little strength work and I'm still riding three times a week. It's always something extreme and new. And he would burn himself out pretty badly by just doing Zwift races.
Oh, geez.
So he would get on, go way over his threshold to, you know, keep up in his Zwift race in that social context.
Yep.
And then
be blown apart.
Not do easy riding, not do aerobic riding, not do more structured sessions. It was just like, ah, I do a hard 20-minute race, and that's all I might do for a weekend. It's like, yeah, of course you're not getting better. And of course you're not, like.
No. Do you know what solves that problem? Having a coach.
Aaron.
Having somebody tell you what
Aaron,
to do.
On that podcast.
It's like, how do you break yourself out of being like a sloppy bachelor? You get married. And you have a wife tell you, hey, snap out of it, slob boy.
Hey.
You got to brush your teeth once in a while. Yeah. Iron that
shirt.
Go
to bed.
Throw those underwear away. You don't need those anymore. that's what you need to have in order to get you there.
So on that podcast, we've had you.
Yep.
We've had Levon Kalmankarian from Premier Training Systems. We've had Steve Brands from Madison Multisport. We've had a few different very skilled coaches on. I've got an outstanding bounty. If any of you can knock some sense into Aaron's head, we'll talk off air about what the bounty might be financially, but
a bounty.
I will put a bounty on his head. Like, if you can put some sense into his cranium about appropriate, normal, boring training principles.
Well, I think if you have me back on one more time, I could probably break through that.
We'll really get
just,
through
just
after
break
years
through that
of
wall. We'll just kind of come at it be like an intervention. Like, you thought this was a podcast? No, this is an intervention for
We're
you.
Here to talk about you.
This is about you, Aaron. This is all about you. That would be a good topic. We could have an intervention with him.
Just a real training
That'd be good.
Intervention.
Let's switch gears here for a second. Let's talk about Gustav Iden and his illegal shoes. Have you heard about this?
I have heard. You're going to have to break it down for me, A, how some of these illegal shoes, like how the mechanics is such a leveraged advantage, because I understand the biomechanics, none, and B, how different governing bodies are handling it, and why some shoes are approved, why some are excluded.
Yeah, so, I mean, it started with Iron Man this year,
mm-hmm.
and he wore these shoes, but Iron Man did not have a rule governing like what made shoes legal or not legal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty much as long as you didn't have like, you know, big like springs in them and you weren't running on springs.
Because there was a brand that literally did a spring.
Oh yeah.
A few years
like
ago,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah, that was like you saw them at the airport and stuff. Yeah. It was like, I mean, that was crazy. Those are for huge heel strikers. But if you saw the pictures of these shoes that he had, I mean, they looked like you had taped three Hokas together.
Yeah.
You know how big Hokas are already.
They're pretty hokey.
They're like, it's like walking on SpongeBob, right? Yep. So imagine stacking three SpongeBobs up, and they were kind of rockered. So they were ginormously huge first. Iron Man now has a rule against them, so they have like a standard.
Is it a specific brand?
No, these were kind of, these were prototypes.
Okay.
So in any major sport, like so World Triathlon, if you have anything that's outside of normal technical standard, any changes have to be approved
mm-hmm.
by World Triathlon. So, and this really more comes into play in para. So you have athletes who modify their bikes specifically matching whatever their disability is or whatever mm-hmm. their limitation is. So I have an athlete, Omar, who is missing his right arm at the shoulder.
Yep.
And so we cut off half of his aero bars.
Yep.
You know, why have the weight? What's needed? He doesn't have a hand there. Nothing's going to go there. We had to send that in and have that approved because you're modifying standard manufacturing technology. Mm-hmm. So with World Triathlon in Abu Dhabi, which was the first race of the year, Eden wears these shoes. Now, World Triathlon has these rules, and they're you know, quote unquote prototypes. They're not a standard issue that's made and sold to the public, which is the one, which is really the biggest standard.
Yep.
If something
which I would agree with on principle.
Yeah.
Because if it's
available to everybody, special
only to you, then exactly. It could be an unfair advantage.
Exactly. And that's usually the threshold. As long as they sell it, as long as it can be bought in the open market.
Okay.
And then it's okay. But these are shoes that were prototypes to him. Now, the funny thing was, is all this hype came up, and where do you think he placed in that race?
That one he didn't win. He was just in the middle of the pack, right?
Oh, he was way less than the middle. He finished 52nd.
Oh, okay.
52nd, which is like...
So a kerfuffle over 52nd place.
Well, it was the fact that he had like these, you know, I think they were trying to like, okay, we need to have some... I mean, there's not a lot of drama in our sport.
Yep.
We talked about this. True. We talked about the McCormicks and the fights and the, you know, the there's too much glue on the tire, you know, that kind of stuff. They don't get a lot of that drama. This is
especially one of those... not from Norwegians, let's be honest.
Yeah, they're very, very boring.
Oof.
Very
they're
boring.
They're a very drama-free people.
I mean, they're about as bland as lutefisk, mm-hmm. right? It's like white fish. Yep, that's mm-hmm. all it is. Boil it. Oh, mm-hmm. yum. But no, that's
oh boy. So, I said we weren't going to say anything culturally insensitive about the Irish, but now here we've
that's
done it
not
with
Irish.
Norwegians.
That's Norwegian.
I know.
That's me. I've had to have that. My grandfather asked for lutefisk at Christmas every year, and I was forced to smell and eat that stuff. Yeah, it's terrible. So I did not do an Irish leprechaun thing at all. Okay, that's later on in the program. We're going to start making those mistakes.
No Conor McGregor impersonations.
Oh my gosh, we're not going to be even talking about that guy. But no, so the idea that these prototypes are out there, so that and the fact that it was shoes, the fact that he was at 52nd place, I think is just kind of humorous.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to make such a big deal about it, it would have been maybe a better idea to do it if he won, but he didn't, and as it becomes there. So does a product that's specifically geared to help you win Ironman become relevant in sprint or international distance draft legal triathlon?
Well, in this case, clearly it didn't help. No. It didn't springboard him to the front of this race.
But it's interesting that, you know, because you definitely can gear technology and equipment specific to distance. And true. This feels like one of those pieces. Like you're going to, if you have somebody that's running a marathon at a high level and you're going to try and absorb energy and you're going to try and figure out how you're going to, you know, take some of that absorption into a physical property like a shoe sole, that makes sense over a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
But in a 5K or a 10K, does that make sense? Does it become a cumbersome piece? I don't know. Would you have worn something that bulky and squishy if you were racing?
Yeah, because So male elites, they're running 430 to 450 miles
mm-hmm.
in that range?
Yep.
Is that fair to say?
That's pretty fair to say, yep.
No, maybe not 430. Maybe not quite that fast. But they're running sub 5 minutes.
Oh, they're a sub 5, yeah.
Yeah. If you're at the pointy end of that field.
But were you, like, were the shoes that you raced Ironman in, were they different than the shoes that you raced, like, say, sprint and international distance?
So I'm thinking of my good years. I think it was the ASICS DS trainer, so a pretty light racing flat. Was suitable for a 5K or 10K. Probably could have done it comfortably for a half marathon. But, you know, 5K, 10K, call it, I'm doing sub 6 pace. You know, for me as a sub elite, I was doing maybe at best 5:30, 5:40, at worst, you know, 6 minute pace.
Yep.
And half marathon, I might have been at my best running 122 to 125. So again, there's a big difference in pace and gait.
Yep.
And then jumping to Ironman, I never broke 3. I never came close. So my best Ironman marathon was 3:18, which is a totally different pace, totally different gait. And that 3:18 wasn't achieved running like consistent 7:30s.
Yeah.
It was running 7 for a long time and then 8 or 8:30 for a while and then back. You know, so
yeah.
There is a different, you'd have to say,
there's some
nuance and some difference probably in your gait.
Yeah. I would say like the in the gait as well as like the shoe. Yeah. What you're looking for from a shoe is you're looking, like, you can get away with something more uncomfortable, such as you can go sockless and get by in a 5K or even maybe a 10K, but you would never go sockless specifically in Ironman.
Yep.
Because that would just basically chew up your feet and it'd be hamburger. So I just find it interesting, not only the fact that he went out and used something that was quote unquote illegal and he should have known better, or somebody should have known better, but the fact that he used it at a short course race.
Do you think with those two fellas, the two Norwegians, will they be able to bounce back and forth from short course to long course and then back down? Well, or my bias is, and certainly the traditional path is, you go longer and you don't go back.
Exactly. But they have done that. You know, they have gone back and forth. I mean, because you're seeing Olympic gold medalists,
mm-hmm.
Ironman champion,
yep.
and then going back and being at a high level at the Olympics again. And, you know, well, I mean, it ultimately is what is their personal goal, obviously.
Yep.
But yeah, normally it is it's like a one-way street. It's not,
but that traditionally coincides with aging out of
yep.
being just, able to train at that super, the ITU level. I think
you get life.
Yeah.
Also physiologically, they're aging out as well.
Yeah.
Cause it's a young man's game. These young guys are just coming up and they can train at a high level. They are just like rubber. They can do the things and they don't have aches and pains.
Yep.
You know, it's like, but yeah, so I think Ironman becomes that retirement program for them. It's interesting to see them bouncing back and forth.
Yeah.
I think that's not the norm. That is a unique piece. But they are putting pressure on everybody to do it. But if you're getting 52nd, is that truly coming back and racing, or is that just
Well, I would argue no.
Yeah, I would say the same.
If you were winning short course, win long course, and we're back to winning, I'd say, oh, okay, that's a whole new paradigm. But if you're going back to short course and being 52nd.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing, Alistair Brownlee kind of did it. But Alistair Brownlee was not like...
What was his highest achievement in long course?
He won a couple 70.3s.
Okay, so he's not world-class. And I think he's not performing at his normal world-class standard.
And I think he did win the Ironman Great Britain as well. But, you know, he's British.
That's not
he's
world-class.
There. That's not world-class. No, he didn't take podium in Kona or world championships.
Which is interesting because he and his brother, they trained prodigious volumes. They've always done volume of training.
Yep.
So it's interesting to see it not translate. So something about their physiology, something about their gait.
Yeah.
Bridged over.
I'd have to look up where they came in. I know he did. I know he raced St. George and he was out in the front for a while,
mm-hmm.
But it didn't translate over to a win. It has been more on some of the women's side. You've seen some of the women have been able to race fast on both directions, but it is it does seem to be, I would say, more technically.
Is it Taylor Nibb?
Yep,
Taylor Nibb, phenomenal cyclist, because she's bridged up.
I know we got a couple of Taylors. You got Nibb, you got the Spivey, you got them all.
Because Nibb's the one who can ride
like
just ride off the front
horse,
short course, long course, right?
Yeah, she's crazy long. Yeah, and so she has been an example of winning on both sides.
But has she bridged to Ironman or just half?
Just half.
Okay.
And you could make an argument that is not the same.
Yeah.
But her course has been, and her bread and butter is, the WT, the World Triathlon Circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Is
she in your short list for being one of our Olympians this coming year?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
So, and again, we don't know where that's going to go because Katie Sparras and Gwen Jorgensen are now making comebacks.
Yep.
And where will they rank? Are they going to move their way up? And how will they bounce back after having kids versus mm-hmm. the Taylors who don't? And they're racing at a very high level.
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting thing to watch. So, but you saw Gwen when she's racing, she's wearing different shoes than she was when she was running, the New York City Marathon.
Yeah.
And that comes back to the whole crux of it. It makes me with Eden, it makes me just scratch my head as to why he would wear the same shoes at different, at different distances, such extremely different distances, unless he saw that it was beneficial.
No. Do you think, so as we transition into the Uber, can we call it the Uber shoe era?
We could.
Because we've been transitioning into the Uber bike era over the past 15 years, bikes mm-hmm. getting more integrated, sleeker, it's come a long way.
Yep.
Uber shoe era. Uber bike era has its consequences, right? So integrated front end on a triathlon bike limits your the way you can fit on that bike. So a lot of people buy the bike and then come to find out they don't fit properly on it, and there's too much integrated, too much that they can't adjust and adapt, and they're kind of hosed, you know, because it's not built for a middle-aged person's body. It's built for elite performance.
Correct.
So there is a trade-off there, and to a degree, you could say that's safety, or you could say there's risk of injury. But with running shoes, I'm just curious, like, if everyone is clamoring for these new Uber running shoes, if they're not favorable naturally for your gait, but you inflict them anyways, are people going to injure themselves?
Well, and I think if we went by history, the answer would be a quick and easy yes.
Yeah.
And triathletes are notorious for just chasing trends in equipment. When Nike Freeze first came out, which were like the zero, you know, like the
oh, what a silly era that was. They were chasing the barefoot phenomena.
They were. Mm-hmm. And how many people just got blown up and hurt? I mean, Nike was putting out disclaimers, you know, please don't run in these until you're like set to do that. Like your calves are going to get blown up. Those, we chase that.
Newton's,
Hoka's, and then Nike has those ones with like the arrow tips on the back that, that, you know, they were trying to break the 4 hour or the two hour marathon with. And, and you see those on triathlon courses now. It's like,
you know, running a 4 hour marathon.
We chase things and buy things just specifically because we either think they're cool or we think it's going to make them faster. And unfortunately, you know, we aren't good about doing tried and true testing and just kind of sticking with the same thing. If I had to go out, I mean, I ran in racing flats for majority of most of my races, mainly because they were like, it was light and I didn't want to run in a big bulky shoe.
Yep.
A lot of my training was done in a bulky shoe just because that was where your balling came from. But on race day, you want to go light. The bikes, the Uber bikes. Yeah. I agree. There's a lot of issues there.
Well, that's from conversations with Chris Balzer. Because Chris will see someone will come in with their $15,000 tri bike, and he's like, "I can't help you. You should have talked to me before you bought this.
Oh, yeah,
because this has immutable characteristics."
He swears at bikes.
Yeah,
he will swear at that. He swore at those Trek bikes for so long. He's like, "What are you doing? Don't buy that. Like, you can't change that.
That's immutable characteristics with the front end that you can't replace and can't swap out."
Yeah, you can't. You can't do that. You will see that with running. That will keep coming. I think the only things you're gonna we saw it in swimming a little bit when we had the body suits and the speed suits that are now illegal and they've been taken off the market or not taken off the market
because there was an era with those and they were similar to the Uber shoe. They give you that, and at that elite level it's just that smidge of a performance benefit where you set the world records because it was kind of 08-ish 2012
and they're wearing the Olympics and everybody's wearing them and then
like Michael Phelps's peak in those two Olympiads, all kinds of world records fell, and we're only now breaking those world records with more quote-unquote organic or less.
You'd hope so, yeah.
Less. The razor suits?
I don't know.
You know, they had all those special this and that.
It's properties. There's like, now you're doing like, it's a compression. Mm-hmm. Is it like minimal? I mean, I remember racing in Miami with Sam Thielen, and we raced in the Torque suits.
Yep.
The tier Torque suits, which, by the way, Dan Hedgecock still has one of mine.
Oh, really? Dan, bring it back.
Yeah, I know. It's like, hey, bud. Like, not that need it for anything, but like, I'm going to wear that recreationally somewhere. It's
wear it to Masters.
Hey, all right. Yeah. It's like he's sweating those things so bad. I mean, I don't see a lot of changes or dynamic changes in swimming. Unless you start looking at some of the goggles that have technology built into the goggle where you can get heads-up display on pacing and timing and stroke length and all that kind of stuff.
I don't think any real swimmer would ever buy that product, but I think there's plenty of triathletes who would buy that product.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and from a training standpoint, even with heart rate, we talked, you know, as coaches, you never really applied heart rate. Everything was like, you know, PRE in the pool because that was the only metric you could actually go by, that and the clock. But with these now, and if they're getting more accurate, you know, maybe it is something we have to start looking at. Same
wall clock.
Nope. Okay.
Wall clock. Old school.
Old school. Yeah. Well, it's the same thing as with running wattage.
Oh yeah. They've come up with that
wattage meters for your shoes, which, you know, I have not completely embraced.
Yep.
I understand it. I just have, and I've had athletes who have had it. It's people have an idea of what wattage is based in their head. And they try and translate bike wattage to running wattage. It's not anywhere the same.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the same specific application. So sometimes it can be paralysis by analysis. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to our early conversation. How are you governing your sessions?
Yeah.
Like, are you going pretty hard, super hard, easy?
Yeah.
I think if people were more mature, you know, the data is great feedback and you can use the data to measure.
Yep.
But you can't, like, every time, let me put it this way, every time I try and do a test, you know, like I'm just doing a 20-minute test, if I base, like, oh, if my ego gets in the way and I say I have to hold, I can't not go over 300 watts. I have to hold over 300 watts.
Yeah.
If I'm not in the form to do that, I will hold over 300 watts for X minutes and then I will implode and the test, it will be kind of a failure of a test.
Yep.
So it's like every time you govern on an extrinsic number instead of governing on your own, like, hey, yeah, this is where I'm at today. This is where I'm going to stay. It's just you're setting yourself up for failure.
You are. And, so when you do an FTP test and you've done it, you know, when you're in fitness, do you look at what your previous test was and try and use that as a metric to, you know, to chase whether you're starting out like a certain percentage below it, certain number of watts below that, and then work your way up so that you end up being higher?
If for me personally, I don't do them frequently enough where I would really have, they would be valid benchmarks.
Okay.
You know, but I would, each one, if I'm going in with the right mindset, like, hey, I'm going to do a very focused, very good effort here. If I'm going in with the right mindset, that's what produces the best performance.
Yeah.
Here's another goofy piece of information that's both related to DQs and collecting too much information.
Okay.
These glucose monitors.
Oh, yeah.
Because we just saw a female professional cyclist got third in one of the spring classics and then was subsequently DQ'd because she was monitoring her glucose with some kind of something
patch.
Or other.
Yep, patch. A patch, yep.
I was like, goodness, where are we at? It's like, it's a whole new level of too much information, in my opinion.
And these are coming from cyclists who trust, you know, paper that's taped to their top tube and still use their little cat eye when they cross the finish line. And the majority of their data they're getting is coming into their ear from their coach, right? Like where they are in the field. Yeah. I think obviously the glucose monitor has a purpose if you are a diabetic.
Yep.
Right. And there are physical purposes for that. For the athlete, and does it become the cutting edge? I think you're always going to see people trying to have data to get a specific advantage. How that is applied, I think, is a big, you know, wide range of nothing. Because you could say, you could also do that with, you know, you'd be doing like lactate. You'd be doing a constant lactate check. I don't know where for a person like you or me are going to find that, unless it's somebody who's running super lean and they have a thing. Yeah, I don't see the purpose of it.
In elite road cycling where your pace is going up and down, you're responding to the conditions of the event.
Yeah.
It seems like it would be a detriment to be looking at that. You should know your energy level, like, hey, I need a gel.
Well, I don't know they're looking at it. I think probably the way it's coming across is it's either coming across on their, you know, on their bike computer or it's coming across in the car.
Yeah.
So,
you're bonking. You need a gel.
You need a gel. Hit. Take the Coca-Cola.
Because for you could make an argument for the amateur endurance athlete pushing into Ironman, fueling is the biggest challenge. Managing your energy throughout long rides and then throughout the event, you could make an argument that glucose monitors would be a cheat code for a lot of athletes not mature enough to have a gel every 30 minutes or to pay attention to their energy level. So you could see there might be a more serious benefit to certain triathletes, but for elite level, you should know better.
Yeah.
And for those amateurs, it's like you don't necessarily need that feedback. You could manage.
Yeah. I mean, two things going back to professional cycling, the fact that the UCI makes some weird random rule that doesn't really impact anything, like sock length, you know, does not surprise me. For the amateur athlete in triathlon, using that information, I don't know how relevant it becomes, especially if you look at the consumption of calories and the ability of the body to process it and the expenditure of calories at the same rate. I think, you know, I don't know that it becomes a number that's actually necessary. The fact that somebody is seeing themselves, you know, fall below is not going to help their race, especially if they say, okay, I'm running low on calories. I'm running at like, and I'm burning, let's say 850. I can only take in 300. The fact that you see yourself crashing, does that help you?
Zabonk. I can see Zabonk coming.
Zabonk is coming. I can't. Oh, another bonk.
Oh, the bonk is here.
And they go, oh, another bonk.
Too much data. There's too much data.
There's too much glucose on the gel.
Too much glucose in the gel.
Oh, where is too Norman? Much data. Where is Norman Stadler when we need him these days?
The UCI, shout out to the UCI for trying to govern
everything.
Well, and doing their little check of the TT bikes and their pretend checks with the iPads for
with
motors.
The X-ray.
It's like, guys, the elephant is still in the room. It never left the room. The elephant of what's...
Everybody's going to cheat at that sport. It's always there.
The elephant was...
Unless you're on Chuck's team. Chuck's team doesn't do it at all.
Clean as a whistle.
Clean as a whistle. Never gets dinged.
That's my tough question I always face him with is, hey, so if you're going to compete in Europe and you're going to reach the next echelon in the peloton... How are you going to do that?
Where's your cheating coming at?
Where
are you cheating at?
How are you going to avoid cheating to beat cheats?
Oh my gosh, that's
we'll let him answer that question.
Yeah,
separately.
That's another. We'll
topic
have,
for another day.
Well, we tried to have Chuck on here a number of times, and he dodges that bullet. He won't do it unless there's money involved for him. If we paid him, Chuck, he would come.
You think so? I don't think so.
I don't even think he would there either. Nope. He would come specifically just to make fun of you.
Well, he would use so much profanity in a 5-minute period you couldn't air the podcast.
No, we couldn't. It's so inappropriate. How he has not been Me Too'd by now is just beyond me.
It just boggles my mind.
I wonder
if he's like keeps it crispy, like if he has a corporate mode he flips into.
Oh, he does.
Okay.
Yeah, he does.
I've never seen it.
Well, it's like if you see him around K-Bebs, right? Like he's a different person
on
K-Bebs when he was just with the guys. Totally different person.
Okay.
He's got.
Should we be outing him like that? I don't think we should.
No, we shouldn't. He's
Charles never says cuss words.
Yeah, we've not identified who actually we're talking about here. You know, it could be a number of different people, which we have not said any real names. So we'll just put that back. St. Patrick's Day is coming around the bend.
Yep.
Are you celebrating?
Conor McGregor Day.
It's Basil McRae Day. Speaking of which, yeah, I mean that was. You didn't come down for the beer rollout.
No, I have two children, Chris. I don't go to beer based events and abandon my wife.
This was me. It wasn't like me dodging your birthday, which
you
by the way,
did.
It was Devin's birthday last weekend.
Happy birthday to me.
Yeah, Devin's birthday cake was branded with MSP Moves, by the way.
Certainly was.
Oh, so crispy.
Why? How could I possibly miss a branding opportunity?
Well, that was like, so on the groomsman's dinner that we had before Jill and I got married, mm-hmm. the cake was SCS Multisport.
Well, there you go.
Who are you
to judge?
You learn from the best, Devin. Yep, you always right. have. So happy birthday belated.
Thank you. So I'm middle-aged. Yep, 36. So
36. You're over, like over
there.
The hill. Totally over the hill.
Just over
Life
the hill.
Life is downhill for you now.
Just we're on the beginning of the downslide.
So you didn't come out. You didn't support the Basil McRae rollout at Fulton. That was terrible. I'm sorry, sad. But Basil was like a total gem.
Awesome.
Guy was the nicest guy. And he actually stayed a half hour longer than he was supposed to. Did a whole Minnesota goodbye as he left the brewery. Like we stopped at the table and said goodbye to everybody.
And you said you packed it out.
What's that? Yeah. It's
packed
all
house?
Yeah, it's all. It was packed the house. And we sold out. So it's all been sold out of Fulton. So it was a huge success. And it was a real fun instance. And to meet your heroes, they always say never meet your heroes. He was a gem.
Good.
And he actually texted me at 10:30 that night. He's like, hey, you still at the brewery? And I'm like, no, I'm at home now. So
did he drink any of the...
He did. Okay. So before he got there, we sent him the artwork. And the proof on the artwork had listed it as a 7.0 alcohol by volume, ABV. And it really turned out to be a 4.8, which is a much lower one.
That's
pretty
a big
high.
Difference, yeah.
And he, when he heard that it was a wheat beer, he thought Blue Moon.
Yep.
You know, he's like, not a fan. So his words to his wife was, well, it may taste like S, but at least I'll get F'd up.
Yep.
And then he got there, he tried it, and he's like, wow, this is nothing like I thought it would be. It's really good. He ended up crushing four of them before he left.
Whoa.
I know. So, you know, it's low ABV. It's like, you know, taking Coors Lights and stuff. But he was like, everybody that walked in, he shook their hand, like met them, signed whatever he wanted. Just really a super, super nice guy. Couldn't have asked for a nicer fella. And we've chatted on the backside and he did a bunch of different promotions while he was here. And Just a great guy. Nice. I mean, it's just a great guy.
Because you worry he's going to show up and it'll be like the Kenny Powers character from Eastbound to Down, right?
Exactly. Are you going to, you know, is that who you're going to be?
Yep.
Or are you going to be quiet and not engage with anybody?
Yeah.
You know, because there's that other athlete.
Yep.
But he was just cool. I mean, he came in, he was super nice and very interactive. So, you know, where it goes from now with that, I don't know. Fulton has to make that decision. But, yep. You know, they had a product that was successful. They have a spokesperson that he would be involved with it, and he said he'd be involved if they want to move forward. Either way, I lived a middle-aged man's make-a-wish.
Yep.
And I was completely happy. So
yeah, you really finagled one on that one, because it's like you got to make beer with your hobby.
Mm-hmm.
You named it after Basil, so you got to meet Basil. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a culmination.
And you know, I've been making that beer for like 6-7 years. And when I first started out making it, I had no intention ever of, number one, anybody making it besides me. Number two, ever, you know, even reaching out to Basil McRae and having him like respond to it.
Hey, Basil, it's me, Chris from Minnesota.
Hey, I really liked you in the Mighty Ducks. and you know, but how it all turned out was just, you know, it's like my life. I fall into more things than I ever try and steer myself into, but it was great. Had a lot of support. A lot of people came out and they liked it. And I feel very grateful. And will I die a liquor baron? No.
Well, probably not.
Probably not. But, you know, whatever.
But maybe.
But it was a fun thing. It was another fun thing. And then I'll move on to something else. I'll still make it. I still made it, you know, the other day. And we have it here at the house. So, but it was cool thing.
Wonderful.
So St. Patrick's Day, are you doing anything for St. Patrick's Day?
I'm celebrating St. Patrick's Day by hosting a triathlon clinic at Now Bikes and Fitness on Sunday morning at 10:30.
I saw that. So what qualifies you to host a triathlon clinic? By the way, thank you for the invitation. I noticed that I was not even involved in that at all.
What, you want to come?
No.
You need some tips?
No, I'll be in Florida.
Yeah, exactly. I thought so. Okay.
Thanks for not making me say no to another thing of yours.
Yes. Yeah. I can't take two rejections in 2 weeks.
So what are the details on your triathlon clinic?
So, connected with Rich from Now Bikes, we are going to go over a lot of basic equipment choices.
Okay.
Race equipment choices, and then a little bit, just touch on training. Just because I was in the sport 10 years, I was semi-fast at my best. And
you were good. You won some races. You won Lifetime.
Right? There you go.
I mean, come on.
But I learned a lot of, you know, I learned a lot of lessons the dumb way when I didn't have to.
Yeah.
And so if I can impart some of like, hey, here's something I tried. You might want to go ahead and circumvent that chapter of your career and skip this. So I'm always happy because I did learn, like I said, I'll learn the lessons, some from other people's wisdom, from absorbing things from you. And then I had to go out and make some mistakes on my own. So it's just...
How do you teach that? How do you tell somebody to listen to what somebody said to do instead of saying no, and I'm going to be who I want to be and do it yourself?
If they're receptive. I mean, you've coached a lot of athletes, worked with a lot of people. There were times you knew me from my early 20s on. So there were times when I was just too bucky to listen.
Yeah.
And there were times when I was receptive to the information.
Yeah.
So it's if someone is choosing to come to this clinic, I would hope they're coming to listen and learn. And whether they take one thing away or 10 things away, I am happy to share whatever value they can find in it.
I think there's also another important message you can relay there in that, and that is to coaches as well. Because to be on the other side of that, because you were on one side, I was on the other side.
Yep.
To not take it personally.
Yep.
To not let it ruin a relationship. To not say, okay, to like make a hard stand. No, if you don't do what I say, you're out.
Yep.
That's not an easy line to take as someone who is a quote unquote coach.
Yep.
But long term, is it beneficial to basically sit back and, you know, kind of let some people do some things on their own, even though you may not 100% approve of it, just because you need to know that they have to have their distance. It's kind of like taming a horse, I guess.
Yep.
It worked out for us.
Yep.
It was a fun ride, definitely along the way. But yeah, there were things that I would vehemently say, don't.
What are you doing that for? Like,
what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yeah. When you took on the real Starkey. Like when you're in your social media trolling days, like what are you doing?
What are you doing?
But you know it. But those are lessons that sometimes, like even as a parent, you know, when Svea grows up, you will you'll have to draw that line.
Yep.
Like, where do you, like what are the things that you're going to stand firm on? And what are the things you're going to say, okay, I'm going to let you make that mistake. And then we'll talk about it later.
Yep.
You know, those are lines that you have to have.
It's all manner of challenges, but the clinic, I feel like there's a million pieces of information out there.
Yeah.
But how many times can you get in the room and hear from someone? And it doesn't cost anything. It's like, oh, I just go down to the bike shop and I can ask them questions or just hear someone else's perspective.
That's a great thing for people too. I mean, because being able just to do a Q&A is important. So you're taking this as so for people that are going to be coming, is it like an all levels, or is it if you're like, this is my first year of training, is that going to be more geared towards those people, or like second, third year where you're going to like take some assumptions of knowledge?
It's geared towards the front end of your career.
Okay.
You know, because it's if you've been racing 8 years, hopefully you've got your stuff dialed and you might need to call someone very specifically like, hey, I'm working through this or this issue. Someone who's further along in their career, you can't go to a clinic and...
Yeah.
You know, so it's geared towards people like cutting a lot of the nonsense. Like, oh, okay, what do I need to bring to a transition in my first triathlon? Because even think about the early days. Again, how do you hunt and peck the right information when you might be signing up for one race your first year?
Yeah. In the I would say that the things that are out there now that are benefits are also pitfalls.
Yeah.
When you and I were starting, we got results mailed to us. You read about them
No. I was late enough that it was just the internet era.
Okay. So you were in that era, but there wasn't a ton of information and there wasn't an overload.
Yep.
Now, you can go Google something, but there's an overload of information. Mm-hmm. And how do you weed that out? How do you figure out what's appropriate, what's inappropriate?
When there's so
many... What's specific? What's correct? What's like what is somebody's fringe theory and what is tried and true?
When there's so many big opinions online.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because there's different coaches doing different... Like, coaches will brand around certain principles or training techniques. It's like, oh, this is my brand. Like, there was a fellow in the middle of my career who was... My brand is reverse periodization. It's like, there is no such thing. That's still just periodization. Periodization is a word with a... Like, you can't just put reverse in front of things or...
There is a thing called reverse periodization. It's not...
Is it moving from a period of... Because periodization means moving from general training to specific training. So is reverse periodization moving from specific training to general training before
it is. It actually is. It's the flip-flop of it. It also goes with volume. So volume in and intensity being very heavy right before a race versus being a traditional.
Well, the guy taper. That guy was using periodization to mean specific set of principles.
Oh yeah.
Or specifics. And it's like, no, periodization simply means general training to specific training.
Yeah.
So it's a like at the surface level, if you don't overthink it, it's like, okay, that makes sense. And as soon as you look under the hood, it's like, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
But it was like, he was building a brand for himself.
Oh, that's what they have to do.
Yeah. I mean, and so there's a lot of people out there, you might bump into their information. You might, you know, heaven help you if you get on the Slow Twitch forum, you get on a forum environment.
Jeez. Get off that. If you're a new athlete and you're getting your information from Slow Twitch, back away.
Slowly.
Step away from the computer or the phone. Yep. Or the internet. That is definitely...
That's where careers go to die.
We called it Slow Bitch for a reason.
Yeah.
Because you go there, and no matter what you put on there, somebody's going to light you up. I remember when I had said that a disc was a good idea, and I had said, well, I think a disc is a good idea for Ironman Wisconsin. I rode one, and I know a bunch of athletes that I've worked with that I've said, and it was like immediately, no, you're an idiot. I'm like, why did I do this?
Okay.
Why did I do this to myself?
Yep.
That's terrible. Well,
so anyways, Sunday the 19th, 10:30, Now Bikes in St. Paul. If anyone is interested or keen, feel free to contact me ahead of time or, you know, just show up.
All right.
You know, check out the Now Bikes Facebook page. They have an event there.
Go get it. And definitely be worth seeing it in person. I'm sure there'll probably be some little purchase specials they'll have offered and maybe a raffle or item or two, a couple of giveaways.
Meat raffle?
There'll be a meat raffle. Get some cheese.
Light refreshments will be served.
Light refreshments.
Light refreshments.
Gatorade and cut up Cliff Bars.
God.
It'll be like a triathlon expo sample table. yummy.
Chris, I had a stomach bug last week.
Ew.
I drank a lot of Gatorade.
Did
and
you?
Some Pedialyte.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah.
I had strep the other week.
If you said the other day, if you give me strep right now.
I'm going to give you strep. Here, let me cough all over you. No, it's like Jill and I had strep. The kids didn't get it, but yeah.
Oh, good.
Okay. Everybody got sick like 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
It was really odd.
Everyone.
It's just terrible. I think it's Minnesota. But it's not COVID.
Nope.
You know, when I got strep, I'm like, hey, at least it's not COVID because I can take penicillin and I'm cool the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, but it's funny how that's just kind of shifted. And it's just strep.
Yep.
Got to take penicillin for 10 days, but whoa, it's okay. No, it's good. So, Devin, wonderful talking. Great information. Best of luck on your triathlon clinic coming up
Thank you.
That'll be a lot of fun.
I feel like we talked a lot of endurance training topics today.
We did. I was very heavy, and it wasn't like we didn't go off the rails on anything kind of weird.
Yeah.
That's, virtual pretty, high five.
Pretty grown-up podcast today.
Yeah, it was a grown-up one. We were, you know what? We were better.
What if people pan it? What if people hate it? I hope they like it.
No, I don't care.
True.
Yeah. They're getting what they're paying for. Nothing. It's a free podcast.
And that's that.
And then, yeah. So, all right, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. Jesus, did I just say that? St. Patrick's Day. We didn't get into the St. Patrick's Day lore, but we may be touching on that next one, so hang tight with that. Make good choices. Do not drink and drive. Use in moderation only. And until next time, we just ask that you be better.